Hi, I'm Joan, and I'm an alcoholic. Already stuttering. Just very excited to be here. And my sobriety date is May 8th of 1993, and Midtown is my home group. And I'm sure you've heard that before, people come in here. But I'm very happy to be here, and got some familiar faces in the crowd, and some not. And I realize that, you know, I'm just talking to people who are just like me. So that helps when I start out, as I know, I might not know you, but if we started talking, I would definitely know, you know, you and I are just the same. And that helps when I go places, because I have that self-centered fear at different times, and I have the alcoholic brain that likes to think I'm different, and you don't get me, you don't understand me. And so it's so nice to go into a meeting wherever I am, and I've had the luxury of going to meetings in many different places and being able to connect with someone right away. Has a lot of benefits, too. If you travel, you can go and get the inside tour to the local town and, you know, where to eat, where to go, and, you know, it's really fun. Some people don't realize what you can get out of it, but I'll get to some of the adventures before and after. So basically, I feel like I'm one of those people who, having just this week, I actually had to break my anonymity to help someone out through. I had to break my anonymity to my boss because someone at work was in need of help, and my boss was shocked that I was an alcoholic, and she luckily reacted pretty well. But this other worker who was right there too, she has known me for 11 years, and she didn't know either. And she was also very surprised and said, you know, but kind of like, no way, you know. And it reminded me of, you know, how the game I kind of used to play with, you know, I wouldn't look like an alcoholic, and I tried to put that off to people a lot of times, like play the, I love to put on a show for some people. It's like the double life, you know, like I have to live a certain way and show you something, and so that maybe I could get away more with what I wanted to back here. And I'm the youngest of seven kids. My parents, you know, it's just different side story. My mom was actually married, had five kids, and then had to leave her husband because he was an alcoholic. But then she met my dad, and then it's like I come into the picture later. It's not even related to the first husband, but luckily I had all these older brothers and sisters, and because of the gap, my oldest sister is 18 years older than I am, and a lot of them were out of the house. But my parents would have, you know, some alcohol around in the house if they came in, if, you know, brothers and sisters were coming in and stopping in. So we had this refrigerator downstairs, which is my friend, you know, the refrigerator in the downstairs basement. So if, you know, company's coming through, if my brothers and sisters were coming through, there'd be some, you know, some beer or some things in there. And, you know, I basically just started seeing alcohol in that way, where just, you know, some older people just drinking, and my parents would have wine, or, you know, just some alcohol around the house, but maybe partly with my mom's history, you know, and just maybe why she met my, you know, when she met my dad, they weren't heavy drinkers. They weren't, you know, there wasn't, like, tons of alcohol. But they definitely, you know, had some wine, had some alcohol, and maybe had a couple sips here and there, nothing big. But I started seeing some parties, you know, some family gatherings where it just looked like, okay, this looks like fun, you know, just the camaraderie and everything. And I just thought it fun to just try a little bit. But it not, you know, going off to doing anything big until I remember going through elementary school and just, you know, say no to drugs and alcohol, you know, kind of all these things. People kind of encourage you to stay away. And I remember kind of even thinking that, like, oh, well, yeah, maybe when I'm older. And I even remember one of my brothers, when he turned 21, I remember him literally walking in the house, was like, he took his shirt off and he's like, I'm a real man now, you know, I'm like 21. And I just, like, thought that was so cool. Like, oh, he's 21, it's such a, you know, cool number. And so it was like this thing to grow up and be. But I basically wasn't like one of those that I jumped into it right away. And I went to this all girls high school, and when we had dances, we had to invite someone from a guy's school and come to our dance. And so that was actually my first drink, was because a couple of us were talking about getting alcohol for, you know, the dance for the after party, and, you know, get some, make sure we had enough alcohol there. And I talked to my date and said, okay, we got range, we got some alcohol after the dance. And he said, well, I just got this new car that I'm driving. I had actually just turned 16, and I was a junior in high school. So I started kind of late for, according to some people. But he said, I just got this car, and I'm going to be driving it tonight, this new car. And he said, I'm actually not going to be drinking tonight. And I thought, well, I bought some alcohol. and so I joke with people that my first drink was because I'm cheap. You know, I wanted to make sure this alcohol, like someone was going to have this alcohol. And it was, you know, I purchased all this, so someone has to have it. And so it was, I started drinking, and really my first drink was actually even wine cooler. So it was not like, you know, anything big. I even started drinking some, and I thought, this is, you know, fruit juice. You know, why have people made such a big deal about, you know, stay away from alcohol and, you know, it's bad for you, and this tastes like fruit juice. And I immediately had this attitude change, where there was a girl next to me who was just drinking a wine cooler also, and she started giggling, and she was being really silly, and I immediately looked over at her and said, I can drink much more than she can, or I can handle it better than she can. And this is my first drink. Like, but I just immediately had that alcoholic attitude, like just this, you know, look at her. And so I automatically knew. It wasn't like, some people talk about their childhood being terrible and awful, and they felt left out. Now, I had things that, looking back, I can say, well, yes, I would cry, you know, I'd go run away and hide, or I'd cry in the corner if I got out of Duck Duck Goose. You know, like, I was just like, sure, I was extra sensitive to a lot of things. And you, like, can look back and see, like, okay, there's maybe some problems in along the way. But it wasn't that I immediately knew, wow, you know, I have found the answer. I just wanted to see whenever we were talking about alcohol, I wanted to see when we were going to get it. You know, how are we going to get it? I just, who cares all the other surroundings as long as there was alcohol there. And I just kept talking about, you know, when's the next party? When's the next time we're going to get it? And so I was definitely obsessed from the beginning. And people started noticing that obsession. And I didn't understand that other people didn't have the same reaction to alcohol that I did. So I thought, of course everyone else is going to want some more of this. But I didn't understand that, you know, the feeling that I had in me was so different from some other people, and that I basically was feeling uncomfortable in my own skin, and all of a sudden I could feel at ease. But I just wanted more of it. And so people would talk about the weekend, whatever that was going on for the next weekend, and that started being too long to wait. You know, I couldn't wait until the party the next weekend. So I found that basement refrigerator, and I started finding other things in the house, and I was very excited about anything I was finding, and I would take certain stash up to my bedroom, and the friends of the time that I had had made me little music audio tapes with depressing music. I used to call it my depressing music tape, and so it's just, these are the type of friends I had that they, you know, the songs on it were not too exciting, but kind of like joking with people that kind of like Behind Blue Eyes was one of them. It's like nobody knows what it's like, you know. And like Depeche Mode, Somebody, there'll be somebody, you know. Like I just would be very deep into these songs and how I just felt very alone in the world and nobody knew my troubles as I'm sitting in this like cushy house in Bethesda, Maryland. I mean, it was like, okay, poor thing, private school girl, you know, like your hard life, you know. But I just, like, my problems were so deep and my pain was so real. And then I would like hold up the beer bottle and look at it and say, you're the only one who understands me. And I just really felt that, you know. It's just, and even with, like, I felt like even if I had some kind of pain, probably because I was worried about a boy or something. And if I had some pain, I thought, when I'm drinking, I can really feel it deeper. And I just kind of liked that feeling of being really deep in my pain. And so that's how twisted I was here in the beginning. But so I just was wanting to find any opportunity. I want, you know, more alcohol as soon as possible. And it never was enough. You know, I kept realizing I have to, like, okay, go throw up in the bathroom and sneak back in my room. And my parents' room was literally next to my room, so I had to be a little quiet about this. And I remember saying to someone at school one time, well, you know, I was getting drunk or something and threw up. And he said, Tuesday night? Like, what were you doing just by yourself on a Tuesday night at your house? And I started saying, ooh, maybe not everybody's doing this, you know. Maybe I shouldn't be that, you know, vocal about what I'm doing. But things went on, a lot of the different things went on through the year and in the next, you know, couple of years of high school. And I went, one thing that happened was I went to, at the end of my high school, we had a beach week. You know, we always would like to go at the end of, you know, our senior year, and we're going to go down to the beach and, you know, rent a house. And luckily my parents had a beach house, and I thought, oh, good, I've got this, you know, little thing to play. And I said to my parents, I said, oh, can we please have my friends stay at our house? Wouldn't that be so nice? And they said, okay, as long as there's no alcohol and no boys in the house. Of course, Mom. And here's the innocent. I just worked the whole, and I worked it with teachers. And way before I realized that, looking back, like way before I started drinking, I would work that, you know, not me, I didn't do it, teacher, you know, as I'm kicking the kid under the table, I didn't do a thing. And they would always believe me over someone else, and it was poor, you know, people that I did. So anyway, I went away to this beach week, got to go to my parents' beach house, and I do not remember packing a bathing suit. I do not remember being on the sand, really. I just remember I was so excited. This was finally, you know, I kept, you know, wanting to have a time when I was free, you know, where no one's on my back and I can drink as much as I want, whenever I want. And I just was searching for that. Like, wouldn't that be great if you, you know, imagine fountains of alcohol and you could just dive in them, you know? Like, I just was just like having these fantasies of, like, you can just have as much as you want. And so I was kind of looking at it as that, like, wow, beach week, we've arrived. And I made sure everyone else brought alcohol too, you know, because I was wasn't sure there was going to be enough. And people started noticing some problems. But so then even my friends, this is what my story is a lot about, my friends noticing how extreme I was and how obsessed I was. And my friends would get really worried about me, and they would say, you know, maybe you should make sure you have a drinking buddy, you know, like someone drinking with you. And I was like, oh, okay, you can drink with me. You'll be my drinking buddy. Okay, you're tired, then you can drink with me, and then you can drink with me. You know, it's like, ha, see, I've got a buddy, you know, drinking buddy. And I just loved being like, ha, I'm so clever, or, you know, and they say, well, why don't you just have one, you know, drink, you know, one-to-one with someone, you know, at least you're drinking the same. And I just like thinking it's so funny that, you know, your glass was like, you have a shot glass and I'd have a huge glass, but we each have one drink, haha, you know, we're one-on-one. And I would do things like that all the time where, you know, my friends would get so sick of me, they would leave me places, and interesting things happened in some of those places. I do remember, you know, one night I kept drinking and drinking, and I actually kept thinking, and I was really upset because I just wanted the thinking to stop, because I loved oblivion, you know, just that word of I don't have to worry about anything, think about anything. I want to reach that. So it's like the world, I'm numb to the world, and I don't have to think about anything. So I was just kind of, it was one of those nights, I just kept drinking and drinking, and it felt like I wasn't getting there. So I was at the beach house there, and I had a pair of rollerblades with me. I said, let me just go out rollerblading by myself at 4 in the morning. Why not? So I just liked that. I tended to be one of those people that I just like to run away from parties, and no one cares about me anyway. No one even would notice if I was gone, you know, just so dramatic, you know. So I just like disappear from the party, so I went off rollerblading, and some people actually saw me, and they said, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I just I just have to go off for a little bit. I can't, you know. So I don't know what I said to them. But I just went off, and they said, well, we're going to come looking for you if you aren't back, you know, within, you know, 10 minutes or so, you know, something. And I was like, okay, whatever. And so I just went off, and I remember just rollerblading, and then all of a sudden I see this cop car in the distance, and then just to show how much I'd been drinking, my perception was a little off, all of a sudden the cop car's behind me. So, you know, and so I just remember lights behind me, and so I dove into a bush, you know, flying into a bush, and so of course the cop asked me to come sit in his car and wants to have a little talk with me, and I just, all I could think about was, okay, how can I get the alcohol off my breath? You know, I've got to get the alcohol off my breath. And I remember people saying little tricks and saying, oh, if you stick a penny in your mouth and suck on it, it'll get the alcohol off your breath or something. So I'm like digging in my pocket for change. And I just kind of, and he says, you know, what do you have in there? What do you have in your pocket? And I said, money, you know, just with this little smart attitude. Money, what do you think? And so he called in the station, and I even, you know, smart mouth talking back to him there. And I said, well, what are you calling me in for? I'm not doing anything. And I had a story right there. I said, well, I'm not very good at rollerblading, couldn't sleep, a bunch of friends, we were up, and so I just, you know, was afraid of going when everyone was on the road. Look, I had something ready, you know, some stupid little story. And he said, well, I'm just calling you in for suspicious behavior or something. And I said, well, my friends were coming out looking for me. Just then my friends pulled around the corner, like driving out looking for me. I said, see, my friends were looking, you know, kind of like my story was all fitting. I was so excited. My story was coming together. And so then, but the part I didn't hear about the story till much later, because one of my friends I talked to told me this part of the story, was that the cop followed us back to the house. And the cop talked to them and was like, just watch out for her. Something, he made some comment. Like, of course, like, I thought I got by. Like, ha ha, I tricked that cop and he never caught me. And I mean, I totally thought I was so smart. And he was, of course, saying, you know, just watch out for her. And so my friends were so worried. They immediately hid all the alcohol. And I was very upset because, of course, I was drinking all their alcohol first, and they hid my alcohol. How dare you take my alcohol? That was my alcohol. So it's just, things happen. And then right after that week, one of my good friends, who I'm actually going to see tomorrow, go visit tomorrow, she lives down in Atlanta, so I've known her since I was 10, and she was so upset about me, and she was one of those that told her parents, you know, I'm Joni is doing all these crazy things. I'm really worried about her. And her parents didn't believe her. You know, it's just like, no, not Joni. She's not doing anything wrong. And they really didn't believe her. So she had to say, like, no, look, I'm really worried. She did this and this. And, you know, at the time, I just thought, how dare my friend turn me in, you know, because she, you know, told her parents on me, and they talked to my parents, and I was very upset with her at the time. But anyway, because of that, her talking to her parents and them talking to my parents, I had to go see a psychiatrist right away that summer. And this was the summer before college. And so then once again, it was kind of a dull summer. I also got kicked off insurance for my driving problems, which aren't really all alcohol-related, but I think it's alcoholism, really, because I was one of those people that, you know, it was basically, you know, if it, you know, went up to 85 in the car, you know, the speedometer, you can see 85. Well, if it only went to 85, if I pin it and then count how many seconds it gets back to 85, maybe I can guess about how fast I'm going. You know, that's the way I used to drive. So, and people used to say I had a death wish, and I was like, no. And I just felt like I wanted, you know, like I thought I had some kind of control over this. And it was where I could be, you know, wild and crazy. So anyway, I got kicked off my driving. And so it was a very boring summer where I couldn't do things. And I got to go to college. And it's like, haha, once again, I'm free. Nobody knows me here. I can start over fresh. And this is so exciting. You know, college, you can drink whenever you want. You know, you can find ways to get it more easily. And so I went away and I had a little orientation before college, you know, the week you get there and you meet a couple people and you go around. Well, in that week of orientation, before school even started, I went to this concert, and you know, people, you know how expensive alcohol is at a concert. You know, you have to, it's just like a lot of times beer, and you have to go to the bathroom so much, so you have to make sure you really get drunk enough beforehand. And I'm one of those people that, you know, I didn't fully understand umbrellas or fruit in drinks. I don't know why you even need glasses. Just straight out of the bottle, grain alcohol is fine with me because, you know, it burns going down. It's kind of like medicine. Like, if it burns, and you kind of have to shake your head. You know it's really working. So I just like that kind of feeling. And so I had my, like, little grain alcohol, like, nice. It was a cup, one of those cups, like plastic cups with a straw with a little top on it. And I had my cup full of alcohol, and because I have to make sure I get drunk enough before the concert. And we, you know, everyone's going to the bathroom. We have these little Port-a-johns outside, and I dropped my drink in the Port-a-john, and I had that dilemma. What do you do? And I thought, well, if I was a diabetic and that was my insulin shot, or if I had just gotten bitten by a poisonous snake and that was my antidote, I'd get it, right? So I got it out, you know, and when you're an alcoholic like me and you think that that's your only answer, you do things like that, and I kept telling people that little top was on, you know, nothing got in, but I actually knew with something like that, I was like, you know what, that's something I won't tell people. Like, I didn't tell my friends that I was at the concert with, so it just made sure I had to finish that drink and then get in the concert and everything, and then these people, like I said, people didn't even know about stories like this. And these people that I just met in orientation, they said to me, this one guy who actually I started dating and everything, but around that time, he said to me, he said, in that first week, he said, I made an appointment for you tomorrow at the Center for Alcohol and Drug Assistance on campus. And this is just from the little information that he had, you know, and so I was like, well, you know, I kind of like this guy, you know, just start dating, maybe I'll go, you know, go see. And because I wasn't always getting too far in relationships, so, you know, got to get what you can get. And so I went to this alcohol and drug counselor, and I went there and talked to the counselor. And she was one of the first people that didn't just attack me. I was so used to hearing these people looking at me with disappointment and disgust and shaking their head and just so confused and pointing their finger. And I just was so used to talks like that of people looking down at me and talking down to me. And she actually was just kind of talking about, like, oh, okay, tell me about this guy. Tell me about your friends. And she kind of wanted to talk to me. I was like, okay, this isn't so bad to talk, go see her. And so I just started seeing her as kind of like a counselor on campus. And then she started slipping in some information about alcoholism. Like, oh, well, we're here for this anyway. Let me just show you this stuff and talk about this. And then I remember one time, October of that year, actually, she tried to get me to go to an AA meeting. And I was very against that idea. But she said that there was some guy that wanted to go, and he wanted someone to go with him and didn't have anyone to go with him. So could I go with him? And all of a sudden, so I went with this. I went with him. And turns out there was someone else in the car. So, wait a minute, he didn't really need me there. You know, I was like, oh, they tricked me. But the only thing I remember from that meeting was the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I remember hearing that and thinking, well, no, I don't want to stop drinking. You know, I literally remember thinking, I have no desire to stop drinking because I thought that was my only answer to living. So why would I want to stop the only thing good in my life? You know, the only thing I really, the only one who understood me, you know, like I felt, you know, it's just, why would I stop that? Why would I end that relationship when there's all these people who don't understand me, all these people I keep being in conflict with, or I can't show up for the day? How could I possibly stop doing that? And so I kept drinking along that year and through the year. And I had a lot of things happen during that year of just, you know, where I definitely come to a stumbling place and have some problem. And I was still seeing this counselor. And so she was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, you get kind of more ready, you willing. And so she would kind of slip things in there. And finally, by the end of the year, enough things happened to where you know, she said, you know, how about this, there's this rehab you could go to. And I immediately thought to my summer before, which was an awful summer. I had to go see the psychiatrist all summer, and I had kicked off driving, and everyone's kind of looking in on me, on top of me. And I thought, well, rehab could be kind of like a summer camp. You know, like, I thought it was like running away. I don't want to face my parents and have them on top of me and everyone watching me. So I just kind of thought, so I even said to her, I said, well, I don't have to stop drinking, do I? And she said, well, most people go to rehab to stop drinking, but, you know, she just so desperately wanted me to go. She was like, no, just go, you know, whatever. She really just wanted to kind of get me there. And so I bought into it because I just had a couple things happen that were kind of, you know, I mean, and to some people it might not seem like a big deal, but it was just like, you know, certain breakup things and friends turning everything kind of, the world getting smaller and smaller, and it's just not really being able to face the day. And so I agreed to go, and that is actually my sobriety date, is when I went off to rehab. And it's funny because, you know, you can look back and think, well, if I knew that was my last drink, you know, I would have gone out really big. And that just shows how sick we are. But but I even remember the night before I went to rehab, I was drinking with this guy who was a trucker who, like, he was actually trying to convince me I was an alcoholic, which I was buying into really well. I was like, yeah, I know I'm not. And he was like, you're not that bad, are you? I'm like, no, really, I'm not. And so I just remember it wasn't like a huge night. The night before was not like out with a bang, you know, or something. And then I went away, and I remember being in this rehab, and I'd say a couple of good things that happened there were they gave everyone a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had us go to meetings every day. They either had meetings there, or we went out to meetings, and so it was very AA oriented, and they'd kind of try and talk, encourage us about going on to meetings, and, you know, it's not just here, the rehab, like, you need to kind of go on and make sure you get a sponsor, and they even had us, assigned us a sponsor. They found in our hometown where they had alumni from the rehab, and they'd call them and connect, make sure you're connected to this aftercare. They were very big on all these things to make sure everything was okay. Well, that was one thing I'd say that was pretty good. And another thing was they had, there was a spiritual aspect where we would go to this church there, but it was really not like a church. It was kind of like a meeting, and they'd throw in some prayers and things. So it was, I was like, oh, like kind of seeing a different angle of, you know, it's different from church from my childhood. And then also what happened to me there was I was 18 at the time, and I saw people that were younger than me. There was a couple people younger than me. They were excited about being sober. And I mean, they had already, I guess, been in there a little bit, but I just didn't think that that was possible. I thought, how could you possibly be, you know, because I wanted to play that, you know, oh, I'm just young and it's a phase, or, you know, I can't get sober now, so what if I'm an alcoholic? I might know I'm an alcoholic, but why would I want to stop now? But that helped me, seeing people that were excited about being sober, because I would hear stories just like we do, and you'd say, okay, they're alcoholics just like me, but they want this. You know, why do they want this? And that's kind of the intriguing thing here with alcoholics is when it's one alcoholic talking to another is, you know, wait a minute, but you're drunk just like me, but you want to be sober? Why, you know, don't you love that alcohol? So I was hooked in a little bit with that. And then I came home. It was really funny though. There was a couple things that happened in rehab where I did treat it like a summer camp at first. And I was all about boys there and playing sports, you know, they had sports there. And there is this treatment plan you're supposed to be following. It's not just summer camp. And so I had to kind of stay a little bit longer than they originally wanted me to. But it still wasn't that bad. I know some people's stories like months and months, but mine was just like, you know, just about a month. And so I came home and I started going to meetings right by my house, and I was still connected. They had me with a sponsor, and the sponsor they connected me with was someone who, she even was trying to encourage me to go find some young people. She said, you know, go find some people close to your age. And I thought, you know, I actually kind of liked, she was an older woman who I kind of liked, you know, being with some of the people that I was with. They were kind of patting me on the back, like, way to go, you're so young. And wait, you've got your whole life ahead of you. You're just great. And I kind of took that as like, yeah, look at me. And I was just, you know, I got a little pat on the back. And I felt like it wasn't people that knew me. And, you know, like I didn't have to be with people my own age. And I was thought that would be more uncomfortable. because I didn't know how to be with people my own age without drinking and the peer pressure and everything. So I kind of didn't want to be around people my own age at first is what I thought. So she told me to, you know, try that, and then, but I just started slipping to meetings right by my parents' house and coming home and going there and coming home, and I kind of thought, well, this is it. You know, you've had all the fun in life now, and all the fun is over, and this is your price. You've paid your price. So you've done everything, and this is your punishment, you know, kind of is what I thought. And so then I started, I actually met someone at a meeting close to my house, my parents' house, who said, she made this announcement about this conference called ICKYPA, International Conference of Young People in AA. And she made this announcement, and she said, we just went to New York, and we just got back from New York, and we are, which is funny, because I think it's in New York next year, that's what I heard. We just got back from New York, and we're getting ready, we're going to go to Atlanta next year, and we're getting ready, we're doing this, and she just was really excited. And at the same time, I'd say, like a couple days before, I'd met these three people, these three younger people, they kind of jumped on me right after the meeting. Like, oh, hi, how are you? And they encouraged me to come to this other meeting with them. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to this meeting, like right by my parents' house. And they said, oh, well, our friend Rachel's going to be there. And she's the one that made that ICKYPA announcement. So it's kind of like, oh, that's weird, you know, she's here. And then another kind of God thing that happened was because I'd been kicked off insurance that overlapped into my whole first year of sobriety. I couldn't drive, which was really good because I had my parents learned well. They dropped me off at the meeting and make me get a ride home. that was really good. So I had to find a ride home. So I'm just thinking, okay, I don't like talking to anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. This girl, Rachel, they said they knew her. Okay, I'll go ask her for a ride. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, I can kind of go up to her. So I think I said in one sentence, what is ICKYPA? Can I get right home? You know, just very nervous. And she said, sure. And she was one of those talkers, and she just was so excited to scoop me up and, you know, I'll take you home. And she was just, I remember her chain smoking cigarettes and she had a pickup truck at the time. And she just, I remember her taking me home, and she just kept talking. It was kind of like, oh, honey, come with me. And, she said, what's your plan Friday? What's the plan this day? And I had no plans, which is another good thing, to have no plans. Nobody really wanted to have plans with me, but that's also a good thing, too. And so she kind of scooped me up, and she's like, well, come here with us and do this with us. And I thought that was great because I had nothing going on in my life, and someone wanted to be with me and was excited about being with me. And she started just taking me around, a bunch of people doing things. And she would say, you know, come on, let's pick up chairs. Let's go here early. Let's, you know, hang out before the meeting, after the meeting, and just all the time. And I just started, you know, basically getting in her back pocket. And then all of a sudden, it kind of dawned on me, oh my gosh, I haven't been thinking about drinking. You know, it's like I got tricked into AA, you know, it's like I wasn't planning all this. And then all of a sudden, I was sober, and I hadn't been obsessing about alcohol for that long, and that's amazing for someone like me. And so I feel like sometimes I got tricked into AA, you know, like get swallowed up by the fellowship. But then, you know, I started going to conferences everywhere and going around, you know, wherever I could do anything. And I was also, used it too much with my parents, my poor parents. I think I was worse right after I got sober than when I was drinking. Because when I was drinking, I was trying to play this game of I'm not so bad, and if they think I'm calling or something, I'm home on time or I get home on time, they won't ask me questions. Well, I like to stay out later when I was newly sober and go everywhere and hang out and, you know, just, you know, roam around. But it was good because I got swallowed up by the fellowship and I was so excited about being here. And then all of a sudden, it was, I got sober in May, and then that fall, I thought, you know, because I'd been to school my whole freshman year, I'd been drinking at my school. And I thought, well, everyone goes to the same school for 4 years, right? These old ideas in my head, like I had to go continue back at that same school where I was going. And a lot of people were saying, that might not be a good idea, you know, you know, really drinking there, you know, and not like if people can't do it, because people definitely can go back to school sober, and you just have to make sure you have a sponsor and a network and get hooked in. But, you know, they, you know, people are telling me that different sides of it, and so I was, of course, very sure of what I wanted, you know, like, well, I'm just going, you know, and so I decided I was just going back to school, and you know, I listened to some of the things they said, and I went there, and I got a sponsor there, and I, you know, even, you know, got, I went to some meetings in advance, and had meetings lined up, and met, there was one sober guy on campus, and this is not a small school, that small of a school either, but it was like one person admittedly sober that was going to meetings, and so I, you know, tried to connect with people and doing things, and all of a sudden I was there, started seeing the old friends, and, you know, I had to tell my roommate that I couldn't room with her, and then I was going to have to get a single room on the other side of campus away from the cool party scene where I was going to be, and so I was doing some things to get away from it, but I basically saw myself trapped in this little room way off campus, and, you know, started thinking, and just, I'm all alone, and I just, seeing these people, and just, and I felt like, you know people have said I can get these numbers and do this, but I don't know if I have it in me to start over. I've been sober all summer and had a great time, and now I have to start all over, and I don't know if I can. You know, it's kind of what happened if I look at it now. And luckily, I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily the best thing at the time for this girl, but luckily this girl who my sponsor now, she came up to visit. She really missed me. She's like, oh, when I come up to visit you that first weekend, just like the 1 week. And she came up to see me, and I was so depressed. And I was just like, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything. We can. And so she knew that some of our friends from here were still down at the beach in Ocean City, Maryland. And she said, well, if we go right now, we can go to the beach for the weekend, and you can get back to school. And I was like, okay, let's go. So we went to the beach in Ocean City, and we met up with a lot of our friends from my home group. And I basically was like, I'm not going back there. I'm not going back to school. Like, once I got away from there, I was kind of, like, taken away. I was like, ah, phew, you know, I just want to stay with you guys. And I remember my sponsor had, Rachel was my first sponsor, and she was out of town during that week, and she had me talking to Karen, who's actually my sponsor now, and Karen was like a temporary sponsor whenever Rachel was out of town, and so Karen was there, and I remember talking to her, and she was saying that, you know, well, you're going to have to call your parents now. I remember going through all of it. I was just like, I'm done. I'm not going back. I'm not seeing it again. And so anyway, I came back home, and I remember I had to get a job, and I had no experience doing anything. You know, I'd been babysitting, and my resume was like babysitting and working at my dad's office. You know, like, oh, look at, you know, big, you know, a lot of stuff to go on. And so I ended up, just because of that, working at a daycare. I thought, well, I'll just work at this daycare, which was great. I was working with two-year-olds. You know, I was 3 months sober, and they were right on, we were right on the same level. they had temper tantrums, and, you know, it was great. So I didn't really want to deal with the parents very much, but the two-year-olds and I were right at the same level. So that was a lot of fun, and I worked there all year, and ended up, because it was one of those daycares, you know, a lot of the staff come and go, and it turns out by the end of the year, I was the lead teacher of the classroom, which, you know, I was 18 at the time, lead teacher. A lot of these parents at first were a little bit like, you know, you're in charge of our child, you know, but then they saw, you know, I really, you know, did love the kids and really care for them, and so, you know, it went really well, and then I thought, well, maybe I'll try and go back to school. My sponsor, Rachel, was going to University of Maryland, and I thought, well, okay, maybe I'll go to University of Maryland. It was just all kind of like how it happened. It's very funny because I have a story that sometimes I tell people who aren't in AA, because they ask me, you know, about sometimes my school, and I was like, well, I went here my freshman year, but then I took a year off because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and it just sat, because it's funny, like, I took a year off, and then, you know, I started getting into And I worked with kids, and then I got into education, went into teaching. And it just kind of all looks like it fits together, but that's not exactly how it happened. It's kind of like, drunk and no experience, babysitting, got into working with kids, and then I didn't immediately say I'm going to go into education. I just thought, okay, well, I'll try school where my sponsor's going to school. You know, let me just try that. And she liked education, so let me try education. Sure, I'll do that. And she knew I liked kids and liked helping people and doing things. So, sure. And it was just like, and I had no mind of my own to do anything anyway. And so I was like, sure, I'll do whatever you're doing. And then she changed her mind many times and was out of education, but luckily I was already on the track, you know. I was like, oh, okay, I like this. So I kind of went ahead with that, and it's amazing how things happen, because I was even talking about, we were in the car ride up here, and I was talking about how, you know, speaking at an AA meeting has helped me be able to show up for classes where I have to get up and do a presentation or do something. And it's amazing all the things that I started learning in AA were able to help me in different areas of my life, like show up for life and the principles that we learn here. And I also noticed a lot of things that happened to me where, you know, I had, like I said, I kind of got swallowed up by the fellowship at first. But it was one of those where I couldn't stay sober on just the fellowship. And that definitely can hit you if you, you know, realize, you know, I was actually very big into service and very big into fellowship, unity service, yeah. And then it's like, yeah, I'm doing recovery, of course. You know, it's like I'm reading stuff, I'm doing steps, like checking off the steps and doing it. So it wasn't like I wasn't doing it. But it's just like sometimes it seemed like maybe a little uneven, you know. And my sponsor now likes to talk about that's a, you know, three sides of the triangle, you know, legacies of, you know, unity, service, and recovery. And recovery's the base, you know, you need to make sure you're doing that. And that's a lot of times something with me that you can, it's like what you're doing behind closed doors and when no one's looking. And so it's good to put on the show, but then, you know, what am I really doing? So I had a lot of those things happen where, in sobriety, I feel like I've had so many turning points of it's either going to grow or go. You know, it's just like so many times I've come to this place of, how's it going for you? And are you really going to be able to stay here or not? One thing that happened to me was my first sponsor, Rachel, told me she couldn't sponsor me anymore, and I was devastated because I was one of those people that just held on to her, and she was everything to me. Luckily, she said, you know, you call Karen, because you've been talking to Karen, you call Karen right now before, you know, I leave, you know, and you get hooked up with her. And at first, I was very upset with her. But then years later, I saw how she did what she did, and she actually admitted to me that she had a lot of resentments, and she didn't want her resentments to get mixed in with what I was doing. You know, some people that I was hanging out with, she was resentful against, and so I couldn't just talk to her regularly about some of these, you know, things going on, and she said she couldn't accurately help me. And at first I was very upset, but later looking back, I was like, wow, you know, that was big of her to kind of say, I can't help you, you need to go with someone else. So I started working with Karen, and I thought, oh, well, this is a totally different relationship with the new sponsor, where, you know, with the first sponsor, I was just, you know, following her everywhere, and, you know, kind of like, you know, almost like a little puppy. Like, I was like, okay, you say go, you say jump, okay, you know, and anything she wanted, and I was just like, wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, sure. And I was excited, because I was always around her. And then with Karen, it was, I kind of had to be a little bit more on my inventory and have it ready, and oh no, you know, if I have to, when I'm going to talk to her, I have to be ready with something, and I can't just hang out with her all day long, and it'll somehow get out there, you know, some inventory will sometimes get out there. So I had to kind of be a little bit more up on things, but it was just like changing relationships, and I'm someone that's not good with change, you know, do not change anything on me. So I had that, you know, happen. That was, I remember, a hard time, and all the ups and downs of breakups, you know, that was always the big drama. It's funny looking back at some old journals. You can just, like, insert different name here, and it's, like, same problem, different person. And so I had a lot of those, and big deals at the time. And you think about, you know, looking into the big scheme of things, you know, where it's like, was that really a big deal? And it's like, of course, at the time it was. And then I know that some good things up and down happened where I was 4 years sober, and I got to go study in Europe for the summer. I studied in Spain, And I was one of those people that I started taking Spanish when I was really little, and I was so shy. I mean, I was petrified of doing anything. I was so shy in front of people just all the time. People talk about shy being self-centered fear, but I was one of those kids that, like, some people would say, "Did she talk?" You know, I just was so petrified in front of people. And so Spanish was one of those things. I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to say anything. And so I went away to Spain, and I feel like my Spanish only got better because the place where I went only had one English-speaking AA meeting a week. So I went to some Spanish-speaking AA meetings, and I had to share in Spanish and talk to people, and I was hanging out with people before the meeting and after the meeting, and that's where my Spanish got better. But I can't tell everybody that. Like, well, where'd you learn your Spanish? In AA meetings in Spain, really. I mean, that's where I got better, and you should try it sometime. Doing things where, you know, it's amazing the things that we get to do, and that's, like I said, I did a little whirlwind tour of Europe, and I remember doing it like a 3-week tour and showing up places. And I went one time, I remember showing up in Florence, and I was so excited because I went there, got a place to stay, put my stuff in the place to stay. I got there at 4:00 in the afternoon on the train, got my place to stay, and I was in a meeting by 4:45. And I was like, this is so cool, you know, like I just was like, wow. And then I got like the special tour around the city and got to go to dinner with the people from the meeting. And then there were times like then everybody goes home to their respective places. And there were times I felt like it was just me and you, God. You know, even like in Europe and things where, wow, okay, I'm really by myself. What do I do now? I mean, even there's alcohol around me. Even the plane ride over to Europe, there was a girl sitting next to me talking to me, and she just started talking to me about something, and she had to go up to use the bathroom, and she put her tray table up and put a drink on my tray table. You know, I was sitting, I guess, on the side, and I remember being in the plane, and it's like it's sliding towards me. I got out a journal. I had my 4-year chip in one hand and started writing, God, please keep me sober. God, please keep me sober. I was like, get away from me. So I mean, sometimes I have to be very dramatic about it, but I had times that I was very close to alcohol, and I had to look at it like there was Mr. Yuck poison stickers on these things of alcohol. Like, I do not react the same as other people. To other people, I see them drinking, as they say, with impunity. You know, people are just drinking, and it's not affecting them the same way as it's affecting me. If I take a drink of that, that is poison to me. A lot of times I've had to do that, and I've been able to be around alcohol. It's not that I can't ever be around alcohol, but I think it's that balance of not being too comfortable. Like, oh, it's not a big deal. I can just have it around me all the time, you know, and splashing on me. You know, it's not like I want to be too comfortable with it, or I don't want to be too fearful that I can't even go near it. Like, oh, I can't even see it. And so luckily I've been able to be, you know, places where I'm present for, you know, people and show up for things to help people if they've had to go to some work function or something and be there with them. And so that's where it's just amazing to think of my relationship with alcohol and how it's changed, because there is no way that how I was before that I could be around alcohol, you know, in that close proximity. I was one of those people at these, you know, sorority parties in college where I remember this one party where they'd have bottles lined against the back of the wall, and I would just get in the door and just run, yes, and just grab a bottle in each hand and just start chugging. So that's why people say to me, like, she's an alcoholic. Like, there's a problem with her. But I kind of liked it, people calling me that. I thought I could drink more than you could. You know, like, I thought it was some ego thing. And basically, I've had these turning points in sobriety and grow and go. And so after I got back from Europe, I kind of feel like I was on this self-esteem high. You know, wow, look at me. I can go around the world and do these things. And I'm one of these people, I've struggled with, like, low self-esteem, feeling awful about myself, and I'm not good enough. And was, you know, all these things that I've definitely struggled with a lot. And so that was one of those times I felt like I did a lot, and I was feeling pretty good. And that's when I started dating my husband. And it was just, you know, things were right, going well, and things were, you know, everything was right. And then we started dating. We got married. And it was really nice. I mean, he's sober 5 more years than I am, and, you know, we had both been sober a while and both done our thing, and it felt like, okay, this is good. And we had, you know, a couple ups and downs, where, you know, he started not acting right in different ways, you know, he can, but, and so then, you know, we went through, you know, some different struggles, but then I'd say it was just like little bumps in the road. And then when, you know, we'd been married about 5 years when we had our first daughter, and I feel like for me, that turned my world upside down, because I was one of those people who went to a meeting every single night, hung out all the time. I mean, it didn't matter if I was working, going to school. I mean, I was doing all sorts of things. I was working and going to school. I finished my, you know, degree, got a master's, and was teaching, you know, doing all these things. And it's like, but I was like, going to be at the meeting every night, and going to be, didn't matter. Nothing will stop me from being at the meeting. And I almost, you know, you remember, prided myself almost too much in it sometimes, where, okay, I have a paper due tomorrow, and it's 60 pages, like 60, 6-0, and I'll start it after the meeting tonight, you know, just like, ha, 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 you know, and I would do stuff like that all the time. And then I got a B+ on that paper, so I thought, well, I got away with it. So it was only, I ended up only writing like 35 pages or something. I didn't even write the whole 60, and I thought, well, see, ha, ha, I got away with it, so, you know, doesn't matter. And so I was one of those, like, you do not miss anything ever, you know, and very strict with myself. And so throw a baby in the mix, and then all of a sudden, I have to be the best mom. I have to be the best AA and the best mom at the same time. And I'm stubborn, so how does that work? So I started bringing the baby with me to meetings all the time. And well, at first, when they're a little baby, you know, you could have people help watch them in the back. Maybe they're not making too much noise. And I even started working out the, like, baby monitor system and put the baby monitor in the meeting if everyone was okay in the meeting. And I'd be in the other room so I could hear the meeting but still have the baby. So I was just working anything. Like, I still need to do both at the same time. I'd be the, you know, be the best. And so I remember the baby was about 6 months old. And someone in our home group came out and went to him. The baby was crying and maybe disturbing the meeting a little bit too much. And I was trying to get the baby away. And he came up to me and said, "Do you see that this isn't working? You know, kind of your way isn't working." And he's an old-timer in the group. And I was like, "Yes." And he knows me very well. And so we were just trying to, like, okay, just have some flexibility. It's not like you can't be with the baby. And it's not that you can't go to meetings. It's just, you're, you know, so stubbornness, and your stubbornness is killing you. And so I, you know, was kind of having to change some things around a little bit. And then I also, with my stubbornness and some other problems, I was one of those people where I have to be the only one to help this baby. And so I got up every hour to 2 hours with the baby all night for almost a year and a half. Of this baby's life, of my first daughter's life. And so I basically went insane, as you can imagine. Some people joke about how that's like water, you know, Chinese water torture, or like concentration camp, probably, you know, it's lack of sleep to that extent. And so I would, and then when I even could sleep, I wouldn't get sleep. You know, I was insomniac. And so I just was doing things, and my husband started saying he wanted to check me in somewhere, maybe, you know, and I was just like, some things were going on where, you know, when my sponsor started talking to me about how this could really affect my sobriety, then something kind of went off, like, oh, like, wow, it's not just, like, with just my stubbornness, I'm like, well, you can't see how far self-will can take you, and I think it's not affecting anything. And then, you know, when it's like, wait a second, this is really affecting other people, you know, and if I think it's just affecting me, who cares, you know? And so then I started seeing, like, no, it's really affecting other people, and it's really affecting your sobriety. And then, you know, I did a lot of different things. There were so many different things. I had to finally just surrender and say, okay, I'll try this, I'll try that, I'll do this, I'll do that, you know, and just had to be open to solutions. And I was so closed-minded to a lot of different solutions. So luckily I tried a lot of these different things, and, you know, things got a lot better. And one thing, my husband was definitely not open to having a second child from a lot of the problems that we went through with the first one. And, I mean, and he even said it was really me, how I was with the first child, you know, how I reacted to it. And he said, I don't know if we can go through that again. And I was very upset about that, because I was sure in my head that I wanted to have another child. And I was just kind of, the stubbornness came in. And I was fighting about it, and, you know, just kind of set my ways. And then finally, you know, I even was trying to trick God and say, I'm over it now. I've let it go. I don't mind not having another child. And it's like, but I hadn't fully let it go. And things were happening back and forth like that. And finally, I was very upset, but I kind of said, okay, I let it go, you know, and I really kind of let it go, and I was actually kind of excited. I'm like, oh, I'll do this, and I'll get this done and do this, and then my husband said, well, actually, you know, kind of like, you're doing much better. Things are much better, so maybe we can try and have another one, and I was like, wait a minute. So then we ended up having a second girl, and she is 1 year and 9 months old now, and so she is... So there's a lot of things, you know, I wanted to try differently with the second one than I did with the first. And I'd say a lot of it was just my stubbornness and my self-will of, I have to do things this way, and I'm not going to listen to you. And that's just how my alcoholism gets me, you know, where you don't understand. And I can paint a picture where every single person in the room, it doesn't matter if I'm in a room of 400 people, no one understands my situation. You don't really get it. And so, no, I'm not going to listen to any of you. Even if you're a mom, no, you have a different situation. And I just had to, so I had to start being open to, maybe they can help me, or you can help me, or sure, I will try this. And so I just, so many things happened where, you know, things didn't, you know, didn't work out, you know, all in my way, you know, with everything, but thank God, and I just looked at the time, I'm sorry, but thank God I, you know, basically kind of gave up my way and my will, and I've had, still had a lot of different struggles. I was talking about my defects of time management is one of them, and, you know, and just, like, worrying about, you know, what people think, or self-esteem, all these things that come up, and just, you know, kick me, you know, and then I realized that, you know, I'm still in the process here, and it's not, some days I'm doing so much better, and other days I'm not, and it's okay, you know, I'm just along the process here, and I have wonderful girls that I sponsor that save my life, you know, they just get me out of myself, and I love them, and if it weren't for you guys, getting all these other wonderful girls that in my sponsorship family here, I mean, just, it's just the support and love is amazing, and I just am so glad to be here, and thank you very much. Okay.